Joanna helps startups and other small businesses write irresistible copy. You need great copy, but either can't afford it or don't have the time to write it yourself. Joanna is on the program today to give you some help writing your own compelling words. She founded Copy Hackers, a website that educates startups and anyone else to write words that sell products and services. If you don't have the time to learn, you can find some of the best copywriters on the internet there as well. In this podcast, Joanna reveals why copywriting is one of the most important aspects of sales, the ideal timing and first steps to writing great copy, and tips for A/B testing and keeping your skills sharp.
You know, I've been at the Mastermind for a few months now, and I kind of understand your business model and kind of don't. So can you tell me, like, where did this all start? And how many, were you always focused on the direction you are? And what is your main goal?
Yeah, it's so big. I'm happy to talk about it. I'm going, you know, way back to 4.5 years ago when Copy Hackers came out of nowhere for me and decided it was going to be a business whether I wanted it or not, which thankfully I now do want it. But for me, I feel, and this is, you and I have talked about my aversion to frameworks or my skepticism around frameworks, and this is part of it. Where that comes from. I've got major issues, clearly. Let's just start with that. I have a lot of crap that I need to work through. But one of the things that I've found in my professional life is that and this is bad and good, I think that any success that I have had with Copy Hackers in particular, it's happened in spite of me, honestly. And it is something that where I feel I have followed a lead rather than led. So I haven't built Copy Hackers. Copy Hackers just like decided to build itself around me, and I found myself in it managing the building of it, which really means just watching it happen, like in wonder, like, what are you doing, business? Like, how are you building yourself? Mm-hmm. And it's because of the fact that I've like, I fell into copywriting initially. Like, I didn't intend to do it. I was in law school 2 months before I became a copywriter. But I had this plan. We all have these plans, right? I had this plan. I was going to, you know, I finished undergrad, went to Japan for a year, came home to do law school, and then I would be a lawyer. And when I was in my 30s, I would write a novel or two. And then in my 40s, I would stop being a lawyer and go on and be a novelist or something like that. Mm-hmm. That was the plan. So first day of law school is coming. It's September 6th. And it's midnight, September 6th. It was like 12:06. Law school starts that morning. I got a call that my dad had died that same day. He died. And how do you go to law school now and start this other life? So I was kind of thrown off this path with this major event. And from there, I floundered for a couple months just figuring things out, but I'm a very practical person. I couldn't flounder eternally. I'm not someone who can travel the world because I didn't have any savings. I couldn't go wander around. I had student loans to pay off. So I had to get into something. And there were a couple paths I could take to do something while I took a year away from law school. I deferred my admission instead of like dropping out. I just deferred and said, I'll come back to it. So I decided to go. I had a friend who was working in a marketing agency, and she was like, well, we're looking for a writer, so maybe you want to apply for that. And I was like, I don't even know what marketing is. What are you talking about? Like, explain this marketing thing to me. And I legitimately had no idea what it was or how it worked. I was an English major. We were very proud of being far, far removed from like the business side of campus.
Right.
We're in our own little philosophy world, right? The humanities. We don't care about making a living. So I said, okay, fine, I'll try this thing. I applied for it. I got the job, to my stunning amazement. And so I decided to do this thing where I was a quote unquote creative writer at the agency for, that's what I started as. I should have started as a copywriter. That's what I was doing, but I didn't like the title copywriter. I thought it was boring sounding. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and then I decided not to go back to law school because it just didn't feel right. It just wasn't there. And then years later, I found myself still copywriting at Intuit at that point. So huge software company, learning a ton about business and marketing, and social media was just starting up at the time too. And so I got to lead the Intuit Global Business Division's social media team, which was awesome. But it really exposed me to all of this stuff, and I started to pay attention to Hacker News, which is a popular sort of forum. It's like Inbound, but it's for developers, and it came well before Inbound and growth hackers came along. So I was hanging out there where all these startups hang out, and I helped some people out with some copy there, and those turned into case studies. And a couple people on Hacker News said, "Why don't you, like, since you can't help all of us, why don't you write an ebook to teach copywriting?" So I was like, okay, I can do that. So I did. I spent about a year writing what turned into a huge book. And I sent that out to some beta readers, and they were all like, too long. It is way too long. It's an ebook, and ebooks were still pretty new. This was like about 5 years ago. They weren't everywhere, and people were like, I don't like reading on my screen. So if you're going to give me an ebook, it has to be a short ebook. So I cut up this big 250-page ebook or book into 50 little books. Or sorry, 50 little books, four little 50-page books, and I discarded some of those pages, leaving behind these four books of 50 pages each. And I launched that on to the Hacker News community, actually. That's how Copy Hackers launched as a business. I just said, hey, I quit. Oh, I had just quit my job at Intuit. So I wrote this post that said, you know, I left my job at Intuit to start a startup for startups. And it took off on Hacker News. And books sold like crazy. I had people like Dharmesh Shah, who's HubSpot founder, buying the book, and I was like, what is happening here? And suddenly people are paying attention, and cool people that I had only like been following forever are emailing me to ask me to like do whatever it might be. Like all of these cool opportunities started to present themselves to me. These ebooks are selling. I find myself blogging to talk more about the things that I couldn't cover in those short ebooks. And you know, it just kept kind of rolling. Like this thing kept rolling and getting bigger, and people kept reaching out to me, and I kept having cool opportunities. And I got to a point in the past. So that was about 4.5 years ago that started. About 2.5 years passed. And so the last 2 years, I've been like, holy crap, what is Copy Hackers? Like the same thing you said. What is this thing? What is it? And that's part of the problem that I've had as someone who's implemented the sort of lean startup methodology, which is not to say that I did it absolutely right. I probably did some things wrong, and that's led to my current-ish state of confusion around where my business is and what it is. Because with lean startup, it's like, okay, well, this is an experiment. That's all Copy Hackers was an experiment. Okay, let's put together, do everything for as cheaply as we possibly can. So I wrote the books in Word. I went to 99 Designs to get somebody to design a book cover for me. Cool. That was like, I think I paid $700, which I was stunned that I had to pay that much. Like I was like, I can't do a business if it costs this much money, which is very little money in the scheme of things. But everything else had been so cheap. I had a WordPress site with a like $20 theme installed on it through WooCommerce, which was like basically free. So I could sell my books online. So everything was really cheap, which is part of the lean startup idea, is do things affordably so you can see if it works and then not have lost your shirt when it's time to pivot or shut down. So because it was lean from the get-go, I didn't have a business plan in place. I didn't know what the model was. I was like, let's just see. And so 2.5 years after that, it's like, holy crap, I'm seeing, but now I'm so deep in it, so caught up in the wave that I can't find my footing. And I had to kind of pause and reset. And so the last 2 years have been me trying to do that work of resetting and figuring out what we are. But I feel today that I know what Copy Hackers is.
And
what do you?
So share with us what your definition of copy hackers.
I think. And I allow myself to make mistakes, and I think that's been a good thing too. But copy hackers is and has been since the beginning a place for startups in particular. And by that really does get to the point of startup marketers is really what it comes down to learn how to grow their online businesses. That's it. Now, a lot of people can say that, but we do it with a focus first and foremost on copy, and secondly, which is related to copy, on things that are affordable and achievable. So because you're a startup, you're doing a lot of stuff yourself, you don't have a lot of money, and you also don't have a lot of time, so that's tough, but you have to have one or the other. You can't have no time and no money. Like, I can't help you if that's your situation. So you have to have one or the other, and we can help you in both cases. So if Copy Hackers is a place where startups go to learn how to grow their businesses affordably and by achievable means, so things that you can actually do, how do we do that? We do that with a lot of free content, a lot of it. Basically all, like 90% of our time is spent on producing quote-unquote content, but content for us is bigger than that terrible word content. It's about the real stuff, like not a list of 6 ways to write a headline, which you could find actually probably a million of those posts online, but rather things you haven't thought about before, tests that we've been running to see, are those 6 ways that people have been teaching you, are those actually right? Are they legit? Let's test them and see, and then we'll tell you what we learn. And so that's the core of the Copy Hackers business. But how do we make money? Well, we have courses where we teach people, startups in particular, how to write copy that will help them grow their businesses. So that's what our business is.
A lot of times when you're in a startup environment, and you mentioned the lean protocol that you follow, it's the minimum viable product. So yeah. A lot of times the CEO founder is the one who's writing the copy.
Yeah.
To start. So, and I know you mentioned before you have a background in humanities.
Yes.
How much does that play in the way you teach what I will call for right now non-writers?
Oh, that's the thing. That's a really good question. It's hard to say because the humanities are like part of my, you know, DNA, right? They are. I didn't go into the humanities to learn about that kind of stuff. I went in there because it was a natural fit, because it felt like it was drawing me there. Philosophy, I want to talk about things. I want to explore. I want to, I don't want to spend my time putting together widgets. It's as much as I love building things, which I was a Lego enthusiast until like my teen years, like embarrassingly long time. I love building things, but I also love the thinking part of things, the critical thinking. And so how does that play in? I don't know. I have a lot of thoughts going through my head right now about it. It's hard for me to say, oh, it's because of my humanities background that I want to teach or that I teach in a certain way. I don't know. I think I've always also wanted to be a teacher. That was what I wanted to do when I was a little girl, architect and teacher. Those are the two things I wanted, which couldn't actually happen together, sadly, unless I became a teacher of architecture. I wanted to be that. I went and taught in Japan for a year. My dad was a teacher, and so I feel like I've always really respected teaching as well as learning. So I loved being a student. I loved the teachers that really made me think and didn't accept my okay work, where they would like punish me for doing poor, like for doing decent work. I love that movie Whiplash, where J.K. Simmons' character says that the worst thing you can say to somebody is good job. Cause I feel that that resonates with me. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to say it. I want to be part of growing cool people, things, and businesses that that push harder, that try a hell of a lot harder than anything you've seen before, to really push for that excellence, to not look for shortcuts. So that's actually where I have a hard time teaching, is because I want to get into the thinky side of stuff, because you need to know all of the, you need to think about what you're working on. And of course, before you think, you need to read. So read first, then think, then act. And so it's hard for me when people want a checklist. They want a shortcut to do X, Y, or Z. I think that there are good checklists and shortcuts. And I think there are very good frameworks too. Don't get me wrong about frameworks. But it's not the same thing for me as sitting and talking through an idea at length. So I think that's kind of tension around having a humanities background and then trying to teach, especially honestly, to teach people in business, which is, you know, it's a different group of people entirely.
And specifically in startup, because it's almost a duality, right? Because in English, I mean, my daughter brings home papers and she's agonizing over paragraphs for hours and hours and hours. And in startup world, it's the minimum viable. Get it out now and, you know, we'll test it and improve it. Yep. So how do you marry that art and love and just, you know, beauty of writing with needing to deliver a response so that you can get sales for a startup?
I think that's interesting. You know, I they're probably closely, there's probably something there, some great overlap. But I do think that of the things that make me who I am, and this goes back to how I feel like I've been led down a path and I have been smart enough to just quietly follow that path for a while. And we'll see what comes of it. It leaves me in the lurch a bit because I don't know what's next a lot of the time. And that's hard for me as a planner, but growing up, we had very little money, like very little. And I've heard people talk about the very little, and I don't mean to compare anything, but my stepmother talked about, you know, we didn't have much, but she had like pictures of beautiful dolls she had growing up. And I was like, you don't know what not much is. Like, we were raised with very little. And my stepmother came along much later in my life. That's why she didn't quite get a picture of where we were before my dad went back to school and became a teacher. And of course, those very difficult years while he went back to school, and we found ourselves hungry a lot, to his huge dismay, right? He was a provider, and but there was a lot of not having money for anything. The things that I look now at my two stepsons, and they get to have a lot of things, and you feel detached from that world you came from where you didn't have anything. Like, the things that you didn't have are embarrassing to even think about.
Or sometimes you don't know what you don't have either, too, right?
But sometimes you absolutely do. You know you don't have lunch today, right? You know you probably have lunch tomorrow. I would never change my childhood. It definitely made me who I was, who I am. But that, it did give me a hunger, like nothing else, like a hunger to make sure that that I'm always going to be providing for myself and my family, that I'll have my education earlier on in life so that should I have children, or in this case, stepchildren, I won't have to go back to school at that point. All of those things, even though it was extremely brave of my dad to do that. But all of that stuff gives you this hunger, and in turn, that hunger goes everywhere in my life. I'm not a raging capitalist by any stretch of the imagination, but I do like making money. I like seeing businesses make money. I like being responsible for businesses doubling the revenue, for a business having a product launch that 3x's or 5x's, and knowing that I was critical to making that happen. So for me, that part of my life comes out in business. That's what makes me hungry as a marketer, and I like salivate at the idea of running an A/B test where we really try to grow revenue or really try to get an X wonderful result, working our ass off to make that happen, and then seeing in the data either that you did and wow, like you actually just did something very cool. You kept people employed at this organization that you're helping out, or maybe you matched people like customers with the product that they need for their lives to be better, or you find out that you lost and that A/B test didn't work, and now you get hungry all over again to make sure that that never happens again. Where from now on, I refuse to let myself have a losing A/B test, which is impossible, right? You can't, but it keeps you hungry. And so it's different from the humanity side. If I was raised in a wealthy environment, I might have gone on to do an English degree and maybe stay in that world and get a PhD in philosophy. But that wasn't the plan for me. And so I think that the humanities is something different from what I have here. The art of writing is not something that I think about very often when I'm writing copy. I don't think, oh, William Faulkner would be so pleased that I wrote this line of copy. He's more like, really? Did you just do that? But that's okay because I'm in a different world. This isn't a world of art necessarily. Not that there's no place for it, but for me, copywriting is just separate from that other writing that I still love, but I keep separate.
And that's music to the ears of the startups because they don't have necessarily the staff, the time, the wherewithal, the knowledge, the comfort. I mean, it's very scary to try to write an email sequence or to create a landing page because you all of a sudden have this imaginary quill behind your ear.
Yeah, it's true.
You know,
I know. So it's sadly. I mean, it's hard because I know that, and I've talked to a lot of startups, thankfully, and along the way, I mean, it's clear that if they're going to put their time into anything, and I get it as somebody who's growing her own business, if any time you spend on anything has to have a great return. You can't keep guessing. Like large organizations that are making a lot of money, let's say, or that have a big staff, and probably because they're making a lot of money, they get to hire people that have are in positions of luxury a lot where they can say, well, what are we going to test today? And we'll see what learning we get out of it. And I believe in testing to learn because that learning will help you grow. So I don't necessarily test to win, although I am driven to win. But I think the biggest win is the learning that will help us have more wins down the road. But that's a bit of a luxury for me to say that. Startups are like, thank you, Joanna, but I don't actually have any time to sit here and do a test to learn and to see what happens next. I don't have time to, as you say, write a drip sequence that isn't going to perform. Because if that takes me 4 hours to do, which is actually really fast to write a drip campaign, but that's a lot of time for the average startup founder or co-founder or one of the first hires in there. They just don't have time. So they have to work on, they have to make sure that the thing that they're working on does bear fruit. And like you say, they can't have that quill behind their ear though. As soon as you look at something and say, oh, this is a writing exercise, you're probably wrong in the business world. It's not a quote unquote writing exercise. And we probably need a better word than writing for things that are related to writing for business, but we'll never get a better word than that.
Indeed. Definitely. So why startup versus the corporate world?
Oh, because I love startups. I love the hunger is what I think it comes back to. You're like, you do crazy stuff that would get absolutely kiboshed in a large corporation. So I was at Intuit. I know what a big business looks like. Even though Intuit has, you know, they talk about lean startup internally and they have groups of people that try to act like startups. So think like a startup, that kind of philosophy. It's very different to be in a startup where especially a bootstrapped startup. So a funded startup has a little bit more wiggle room than a bootstrapped startup funded. You can hire that first marketer to come in and write stuff for you, and then you just do reviews, which is extremely, extremely problematic, which we can talk about, absolutely. So when I work with startups, so many of the ones that I've worked with have been self-funded, and then maybe they get funding later, and most of them don't end up needing to use that money, thankfully, because they've grown their business to a state and they have good revenue. But it is seeing the crazy stuff. Like, I have never worked with Airbnb, but knowing what they did, it was one of many startups, obviously, that has done a lot of cool stuff early on. Mm-hmm. But knowing that they had to go to like conferences and sell, I think they're the ones that did the cereal. It was either them or Dropbox. I think it was Airbnb that went to a conference and sold boxes of cereal or something. Anyways, this crazy shit that like, sorry, stuff that like nobody does unless you really passionately believe in the thing that you're trying to get out there. And then you will do, just like for a child, like your own child, I think you'll do crazy stuff to make it work. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about startups, is just how willing they are to go and do the crazy thing and the hard thing, like getting on the phone and talking to ex-customers, people who stopped using your product, persuading them to get on the phone with you without incenting them, even finding a way to persuade them to get on the phone with you and tell you what was wrong with the product, what didn't it do for you that you thought it would do. This is a thing that in a large corporation, I have found at least, that's rarely the thing that the person who should be asking those questions does. So it's hard for a marketing manager, a senior marketing manager, a C-level or VP, absolutely, to get on the phone with an ex-customer and really listen to them and ask them questions and then do something with that. But startups do that every day, all the time. And who doesn't love that? I love it.
Now, they love community, which means they probably would love to see your face in some of their meetings. Are you taking clients? Do you do client work like that anymore?
So I have a client right now. It's Rainmaker by Copyblogger, and that's purely, or I guess Copyblogger is now called Rainmaker, but I always followed them as Copyblogger, so it'll be hard for me to ever change that, but I'll try. But Brian Clark has become a great friend over the past few years, which blows the mind of Joanna circa 2009. Like, she's like, what are you doing talking to Brian Clark on the phone right now? So Brian has become this cool, I'll call him a friend. I hope he's not like, what, we're friends? I don't think he would be. But he has. And so he had this thing that he wanted to work on with me. So I was like, cool, yeah, let's do that. So in that case, I work with clients. But otherwise, we do this thing at Copy Hackers where, because I always want to stay sharp, I don't ever want to become somebody who teaches about what happened 10 years ago. Not that it's not relevant, but you can still teach about that, but make sure you're talking about how that applies today, if at all. So I need to stay sharp. And to do that, we actually have this program at Copy Hackers. It's called Research Partners. And our research partners are businesses that we work with for 100% for free. We don't want to get paid. And part of the idea there is that we just want to be allowed to work with organizations that have a culture of experimentation, that have a growing brand, which will usually mean enough traffic to test, to run an A-B test to confidence, and who are willing to do whatever we want. So by that, I mean, like, if we're going to run an experiment, sometimes we're going to want to test something really unusual, right? That if you were my client paying me, I'd have to have a big discussion with you about why we want to test a Johnson box on a homepage. And you'd be like, no, we're not doing that. Like, I'd have to have a really good reason. I would expect to have a really good reason outside of, well, you signed up to be a research partner and we believe it could work for you based on this, 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 and this. So let's go ahead and test it. A client is allowed to have different exit. And that's not to say that we test wild stuff that's going to hurt a business. Our goal is always to get a fantastic result for our research partners so that we can go tell people, hey, we just got X lift for Buffer and we just did this cool campaign for Wistia, because that's great content that gets shared, that helps people do better things with their business. And it makes our life easier because now they're coming to our site and they're attending our webinars, and they're doing things to learn more from us, which of course in turn leads to more course sales. So I don't do client work. work, but I do research partner experiments.
So if you're not of the faint of heart variety, you're not willing to go down that path, what's the natural course? If I'm a startup and I hear about you, what's the next best thing I should do?
Well, we quote unquote train copywriters too. So, we do have a really good network of copywriters that, are able to take on work, but of course a great copywriter, once the word gets out, it's extremely hard to keep, to get in front of that copywriter, to get that copywriter to come work for you. So everybody listening, if you find a great copywriter, do not let him or her go. Do not stay on her calendar. Make sure that you're always like, if then that might mean being on retainer just to have access to that person, because it's so hard to find a great one. And when you do, oh my gosh, like that, if copywriting is your online salesperson, which I firmly believe that it is, then, and it's a really affordable salesperson too, that can do tons of work, doesn't need time off, doesn't have weird stuff going on personally. It's just a thing. It can constantly bring in money for you. Don't let a great copywriter go. And so, yeah, we have Copy Hackers for Hire is a place where we send most people who are looking to get help with, let's say more of a one-off project or something like, oh, I want to redo my drip campaign and get more sales. Okay. So go to Copy Hackers for Hire and find an email copywriter on that site. And then if you want something more, like you're like, okay, no, we're redoing our entire site beginning to end, including in-app messages or whatever it might be, something bigger, then it's good to just reach out directly to me and I can do my best to match you with somebody who can actually help make that project a big success, because there's so much on the line.
So not only are you helping the startup company, but it sounds like you've got an ecosystem in place for copywriters as well. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, sure. Happily. We do. We've got, I don't like saying no to things. And that has a lot to do with this hunger that I had growing up. The idea of turning away a great opportunity for a great copywriter. So I know that there are great copywriters out there, and I know that they don't always have the same access to great prospective clients as I may have. We were very fortunate, Copy Hackers, to get some nice people that want to work with us and pay us good money and have great stuff happen. We're lucky to be in that position. We don't take on client work anymore outside of very, very few cases. And so why shouldn't we? We want to help those businesses get great copy, and we want those copywriters to be able to keep running their business and putting food on the table and making life great for themselves. So let's connect the two. So that's what we do. We've been doing it for a long time, but we more recently kind of turned that into a real thing with Copy Hackers for Hire. Yeah.
Yeah, and amped it up for certification and done a lot of educational. I was talking to one of my partners the other day who said, you know, pretty soon colleges are going to be challenged by places like what you're doing, because you're certifying people for writing. Yep. They're getting great jobs. They have a long tenure.
And it's happening fast too, versus like, yeah, I agree. I think, you know, you look at, you know, obviously Udemy is a good example of a place to go and learn a lot of stuff. But then there are these other pockets of people that are maybe subject matter experts. And like you say, moving people into certification paths so that they absolutely don't, they haven't just finished a course, which they could have watched passively while like, or listen to while they're reading blogs, but actually have to take exams at the end. But the really good thing about these online courses is the very fact that it can happen super fast, right? You can, instead of having to wait and apply to get into a university and just to take one course that you want to take in your third year, which is the most exciting one, you can just go take that right now from people who are actually doing it for a living. So I think that, yeah, the future of education, it's interesting. The future of everything is interesting, but absolutely.
A lot of this is going back to, even like you talked about being a lawyer back in the olden days, you used to apprentice with a lawyer. There was no law school. You would go apprentice. You would learn the trade.
Yeah.
And so this is, you know, aligned with that. So it feels right. And I know from looking at your certification courses, they are not easy.
I'm not an easy marker.
There's a lot of red pen going around, right?
Yeah, sadly. Sorry to everybody who's tried. But in the end, yeah, you do end up. I think people who pass certification feel like they've definitely earned it. And I feel very good about recommending clients their way. But it's an interesting point that it hasn't always been that this focus on formal education is it industrial? When did it start? I had a friend when I was temporarily doing my master's in English before I switched to communications and technology for my master's. And he was doing his master's in English on books about doctors in the 17 or 1800s. Mm-hmm. I think it was the 1800s. No, it had to be 1700s. And he would talk about the fact that to be a physician was like frowned upon, like, oh, you're just a doctor, according to some of the stuff that he'd been reading. Like, it's not what it is today. It didn't have all of the training that it has today, right? It was passed down, and you like you say, you apprenticed under somebody. Mm-hmm. But now, today, there's so much to do to make that your career. Yeah. Anyway, it's an interesting thought on education.
Yeah, definitely. So let me ask you a couple more questions. First one is, if you could just paint the picture of the perfect copy hacker's business, what do you see on the horizon for you?
I see, and I do see this in the next 2 years, by the end of the next 2 years, much of it by the end of this year, God willing. I see a multi-million-dollar education business that's well-respected as a place for businesses to learn about communication with their audience, and that coming out of that as something that works side by side with it, with the copy hackers business, is a tool, a platform to help people in business write better. So we teach people how to write at Copy Hackers, and then we have a solution called Air Story, which will exist to help those teams at businesses write better together.
Perfect. So one more question, and it's about your ideal student, really. I'm a startup company. I have my idea. Mm-hmm. When do I start thinking about Joanna and her offering? Do I think
you should
about
always
it?
Think about me
early on as I'm designing my product, or do I think about it? I don't like to use the word stage because that's not the right word. But at what point in the design cycle do I start thinking about what you have to offer?
Early, I would say, and I would say that not because I think most people would say think about it early, but I say it because if you're building out your startup idea, chances are extremely good, and I hope and pray that this is true for you, that you are researching. You are setting up interviews with people that you want to build a solution for. You're following like a jobs to be done methodology to get down to like, okay, give me the documentary view of a day in the life of you trying to do X job, and kind of zooming in on those different parts of their day to find that pain that you can solve. So you're doing these interviews early on. You're doing a lot of research, different kinds of research early on. And you're doing that in order to find the idea and figure out how to make it work. All of that stuff that you're doing is great for copy. So everything, all of those interviews, if you sit there and you're on the phone interviewing, let's say I go back to the idea of Air Story, because we followed jobs to be done to come up with the idea for Air Story. And we had these interviews that we were doing with writers, with editors, with literary agents, with writing teams, content leads, VP of content, that kind of thing, people who are hands-on and more hands-off and just like overseeing it. Tons of people that we spoke with, all to get to this idea that, you know, there was a problem to be solved, but how one assembles ideas into a written document. How do you do that? That's like the pain. There's all this other stuff, right? So we found this to be an opportunity. And if we had just walked away from that, from those interviews, and gone on and built the product and then gone and sat down to write the marketing materials for that product, we would be starting all over again to write those marketing materials. But when you think about the fact that in those interviews with those writers and editors and agents and teams, people were saying all of this great stuff. So we recorded all of those interviews and then were able to go play those recordings, transcribe them, pick out the interesting messages that people were saying, and then use those messages to shape the copy that is on our site today. Because I don't believe that a copywriter's job is to write copy, or that a startup founder who's working on his or her own copy, that their job is to write copy. It's not. The best thing you can do as a copywriter is be a great listener and copy editor. So if you're starting early on and interviewing people, coming up with that idea, listen well, come up with the idea, record those conversations as you do, and then transcribe those, pull out the sticky messages from there, pull out the interesting things. All of that gets placed on your pages and in your emails. And if it would just be a huge tragedy if you didn't think of that stuff right out of the gate, because you would miss out on all of this extremely valuable copy.
You know, there are courses on entrepreneurship in colleges and universities all through the U.S. and probably Canada as well. Are they teaching students what you can add, about the value that you add?
No. Just kidding. I don't know. I haven't been to school in 7 years ago. I think I got my master's. I think some of the great ones absolutely are. I'm sure there are pockets of people. I know that the University of Iowa, which is a great writer school, as any writer knows, they now have a copywriting course or two. I don't know. I think it's at the master's level. I was interviewed for that copywriting class last year, and I'm going back, I think, in 2 weeks to do it again. So they're teaching copywriting, but there's so many pieces, and all of these pieces overlap. So it's like, okay, well, the people who are talking about entrepreneurship and lean startups should be talking to the guys in economics, and we should all be talking to the guys in journalism, which is, of course, not a lot of people are signing up for that anymore. But all of these groups should be talking together, because you're all going to be critically intertwined with each other when it comes time to actually go out and do great stuff for business. So they might be teaching it in pockets, but I don't know. I haven't seen evidence that they're teaching it as like this integrated system of business genius, we'll call it.
The copywriting curriculum.
Right? Have you seen any evidence of that?
No, and I'm in Iowa. So I was I was actually notified by the University of Northern Iowa, and they have an entrepreneurship program, and they had heard about the work that I'm doing, but it's too late. You know, you already have to have your products ready to go. You have to have your markets defined. And what you're talking about is getting them at the incubation level, or even when they're when they're in school.
Yes.
And having this curriculum throughout school systems and universities, it's almost as if I tell my kids, no one's taught you guys to do time management. You come out of school, you don't know how to manage your time. This is the same thing. I mean, it's the core of how we communicate. Why change? Why now? And why buy our product?
Yeah. I mean, there's so much that we don't learn in school, and I guess it's because it felt niche previously, but is it today? No, not at all. Right. But so maybe they'll catch up, and if they don't, they'll be replaced by online businesses that are teaching this stuff.
Yeah, or maybe you have a piece of your business that goes out and seeks out before they get into the incubation process.
Yeah, well, that's true. Mary Lou, you always make me think about the things I should be doing differently. Oh, no, now I have more work to do.
Well, as we close, is there anything else that you would like to share, or other than, of course, we know to go to copyhackers.com to learn all this wonderful material that you constantly are providing. Anything else that you would like to leave us with?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. We are definitely focused on making Copy Hackers a great resource for people. So that's the place to go. And of course, I love to hear what people want more of, what I didn't hit the mark with, things like that by email. So I'm joanna@copyhackers.com. I'm happy, completely happy, more than happy to hear from people about what they're looking for, what their challenges are. If there's any way I can help or connect them to people who can help, that's what I love doing.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mary Lou.